Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.
Welcome back. You're listening to America This Week, and I am Carrie Weber, joined here today by Father Matt Malone and our friend and colleague, Brother Joe Hoover, and we are talking with the poet Christian Wyman about, appropriately, poetry.
With our poetry editors.
Yes, indeed.
You know, I just thought I'd start off. There's so much talk about art and analysis. I want to start off by just reading one of your poems, Christian, if you don't mind. It's the title of your collection, Hammer is the Prayer. And it's kind of indicative of the kind of stuff you write. There is no consolation in the thought of God, he said, slamming another nail in another house another havoc had half taken. Grace is not consciousness, nor is it beyond. To hell with remembrance, to hell with heaven, hammer is the prayer of the poor and the dying. And as wind in some lordless random comes to rest, and all the disquieted dust within, peace came to the hinterlands of our minds, too remote to know, but peace nonetheless.
Does Christian get to grade you now on that reading?
On the reading?
Yeah, on your, what do we think?
Excellent.
All right, well done.
Thank you. So you chose that as the title of your book. It's a collection of three decades of your poetry. Why did you choose that one? And just tell us about the collection and why you are publishing this now at this time in your career.
I think I chose that title because I love it. Hammer is the Prayer. The juxtaposition of those two apparently dissimilar words, prayer and hammer. Nietzsche used to say he wanted to do philosophy with a hammer. Right. I should do philosophy with a hammer. So I assume I probably had that in the background of my mind when this came. But also this poem is it's a combination between a prayer and an argument. It begins in medias res, in the middle of something, and this guy is on the roof, presumably doing some sort of rescue work, you know, rebuilding a house after a storm has come through, and is in the midst of an argument with someone else, and the argument is, of what good is God in the midst of real suffering? And this guy says, none. There is no consolation in the thought of God, but somehow the very clarity of his articulation and the fact that he has transformed all of his impulses into pure action brings a moment of peace to the poem. Peace came to the hinterlands of our minds, too remote to know, that is, too remote to seize and hold in our hands, but peace nonetheless, peace that we had nonetheless, which is how I understand faith. When faith comes to us in ways that we, at least in my experience, are not able to grasp. If we try to grasp it, it goes away. And yet we have it. We know it. We know it so utterly in those moments that we don't even have to give it a name. It's a pure joy in which faith is self-evident, really, or faith in which joy is self-evident, however you want to phrase it. But so this poem is an attempt to. I mean, it's not like I had all those things in my head.
Right.
I just wrote the poem, followed the music. This is all me reading into it after the fact.
Right.
But it does. It articulates a lot of the tensions that are in a lot of the poems that I have written, and so that's why I thought it was a good title for that selected poems.
I love that idea of your reading into your own poem after the fact. That there are things in your work that you can sort of discover as you go along, that you can discover later on, that can have greater meaning as you sort of reread it, or more than you even intended originally. Your work has a wonderful juxtaposition of the elements of suffering, of prayer, of doubt, of faith. And I wonder if you could talk a bit about the parts of your own life that sort of have influenced that perspective. I know you yourself have suffered with illness.
Yeah, I went through a long time without being able to write poems, and I had organized my entire adult life around being able to write poetry, and it was taken away from me for 3 years, and that's a long time.
Sure.
Not to be able to write at all, and it's dangerous if you're an artist to have the medium through which the world is processed taken away from you. Everything becomes dammed up in you. I met the woman who's now my wife. I talk about this in my book, and got sick shortly after that, and these jolts jolted me into speech, and all of the poems in that book that's called Every Riven Thing, Hammer's the Prayers, in a book called Every Riven Thing, all of those poems came directly out of that experience after that, very quickly.
Yeah.
I think I forgot the original question.
that's going in that direction. It was this sense of how your own life experience had influenced that that those juxtaposition of issues in your work, and I think you're addressing that.
And there's one of my favorite lines in My Bright Abyss, Meditation of a Modern Believer, which came out about 7 years ago. Oh, no, not that long ago. 2013, actually. 2013.
Yeah, not long ago.
Not long ago.
Like a long time ago, but no.
This kind of relates to the poem Hammer is a Prayer, Hammer is the Prayer, where you talk about people who would say that faith is sort of people who are just looking for God to take care of them and don't want to deal with the reality of life and going into some warm, nurturing phantasm that doesn't really exist but makes them feel better. And so you say here, if God is a salve applied to unbearable psychic wounds, or a dream figure conjured out of our memory and mortal terror, or an escape from a life that he's become either too appalling or too banal to bear, then I have to admit, it is not working for me. And you put that on italics.
Yeah.
This idea that God is going to take care of things, going to make us feel better, that we go to God to gain comfort and so forth, is not working for you.
Yeah, I think the notion of faith as a crutch is a fundamental misunderstanding, has it exactly backwards. Or if it is that, I think often the crutch gets kicked away. Tomáš Halík has a beautiful, the Czech priest, has a beautiful passage about that in his book Patience with God, where he talks about a couple of people who have lost their faith, including Saint Therese, who lost her faith right at the end of her life, and he says that perhaps faith is a thing is taken away and love replaces it. Therese gave herself over to love at the end of her life, even though she had no faith, and she saw herself as having solidarity with unbelievers or atheists, that she was meant to experience God's absence to that degree. And, you know, we're taught that there are faith, hope, and love, and the greatest of these is love. And Halík's point is that if faith is a crutch, it will be taken away. I think often my experience of faith is that it's not a crutch. It's quite the opposite. It always provokes me. It's calling me to something that I can't quite live up to.
Right.
And I just don't. I wish it were. I wish I could let it be more of a consolation, actually.
Hmm. I have a question which may seem silly, but it just popped into my head. Is God a poet? I mean, is there some sense in which we can talk about God in that way? Does it make sense to?
Well, I did an event once with this theologian who posited that very thing. He said the real question was not why, because I was talking about why do I feel God's presence when writing poems? Why does God come to me in that way? Not only, but conspicuously. And he said, well, maybe a real question is why has God chosen to come to us in poetry, like the Psalms, or like, you know, with Scripture? And that was his idea, that God himself was a poet. Now, he meant it in language.
Right.
I think other people, like Dorothy Sayers, have meant it, creation itself is a work of art.
Yeah. Is that an idea that makes sense to you?
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. That God has spoken the world into existence. I mean, we do get that in Scripture.
Does that make sense to you, Joe?
I remember telling some young actors that I was working with that, you know, God is an artist. God is a creator. You are artists. You are creators. So it's a connection to God. That's one of the most beautiful, names for God is a creator who takes everything that we do, who already created the world, but then continues to create it through ourselves.
Right. It's ongoing.
Right.
It's ongoing.
Right. We've reviewed you. I reviewed your book Once in the West with as glowing a review as I could. And we also, in our new issue of America Magazine, our first relaunch of the new print magazine, we featured your poem as the first poem ending with a sentence from Maritain, and which you can find on americamedia.org. And
we make him say that.
It's part of my bonus. But we, in that question about God and poetry, as Jesuits, we love to talk about Gerard Manley Hopkins in terms of, you know, his poetry and his spirituality. And your poem, which is also the title of your book, Every Riven Thing, I wonder if it's influenced at all by As Kingfishers Catch Fire, in the sense of it's God goes belonging to every riven thing he's made, sing his being simply by being the thing it is, stone and tree and sky, which echoes that As Kingfishers Catch Fire. Draw flame. But it talks about each thing is what it does. That which we are is what we speak that which we are. Were you influenced at all by
each
Hopkins?
Mortal thing does one. Yeah, I wouldn't have recognized that until you. A lot of people have pointed that out, though, that there's a connection to Hopkins in that book. I do love that poem. Each mortal thing does one thing and the same. Deals out that being indoors. Each one dwells. Selves goes itself. Myself it speaks and spells, crying, "What I do is me. For that I came." That incredible.
Wow.
Those incredible syntactical sinuousness there. I just love it. And no doubt I was influenced by it. I have a friend who always gets accused of being influenced by Hopkins, and he says that Hopkins is way too strong a drink to take straight up. You can never get influenced straight up.
It's like moonshine or something.
That's right. You have to mix it with something else. And
of all things to be accused of, that's a pretty good one, I think.
Yeah.
I remember encountering Hopkins as in high school, and I was tasked with having to read a poem at the beginning of our school announcements, and I had picked Pied Beauty. And now it strikes me as a very odd thing to be reading as a 14-year-old over an intercom, but
Pied Beauty, yeah.
those sounds and that sense of prayer that goes with Hopkins' work always stayed with me since then. And I wonder, when you were young, Christian Wyman, who were some of the first poets that made you stop and say, this is what I want to do?
Well, it was really Yeats and Eliot, but I didn't come across any poets until I was 18 years old, I guess, went away to college. I certainly never came across a poem when I was growing up, other than the Bible. So it would be God's poetry that I learned early on. I didn't know any poets until college, and the first ones that really made a dent in my consciousness were Yeats and Eliot.
Was there one in particular?
The music of them both.
One particular poem?
Well, I loved Ash Wednesday, and I still love it, and I couldn't understand it at all. And it's this kind of mesmerizing music. Although I do not hope to turn again, although I do not hope to turn, wavering between the profit and the loss in this brief transit where the dream cross twilight between birth and dying. Bless me, Father, though I do not wish to wish these things from the wide window towards the granite shore. The white sail still flies seaward, flying on broken wings. it's just music.
That's beautiful.
You know, it's just, and it was just, when I first came across it, I just wanted to make sounds like that, even though I didn't understand it.
Oh, that makes sense. And I love that you're either very quick with Google or you've memorized this. because
yeah.
I think poetry is sort of meant to be internalized in that way, and it's meant to be said aloud, and it's meant to be remembered. And when I took a poetry class in college, we all were sort of told you have to. One of our assignments was to memorize a poem and words that sort of stick with you and
they're
stick in your brain.
You.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
It's not meant to be something you kind of open up and say, oh, this is short, I'll read this now and then close the book and put it away. It's meant to be sort of that, become a part of you in the way that it, so many of these words clearly have. And it's a beautiful thing to hear. It's almost hearing you read poetry and is in and of itself a, sort of a form of poetry that's separate from that.
Yeah, I have all my students memorize poems. Even the classes that aren't poetry, I sneak it in there. To memorize poems. I mean, some of my students are becoming ministers, and it's great training for them.
Oh yeah,
and just great to have in their heads these poems that they can call on. I'm a big believer in it.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Christian Wyman is an American poet and editor who currently teaches at literature and religion at Yale Divinity School and the Yale Institute of Sacred Music. And we are pleased to say that we have published one of his poems in our recently redesigned and relaunched America Magazine, which you can find online at americamagazine.org. Christian, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. Thanks, Christian.
God bless. That's quite a remarkable thing, isn't it, to begin with power and politics at the top of the hour and end with poetry.
Right. Good alliteration, Father.
Yeah. Which is the cheapest form of poetry.
Right. No, I mean, again, I'll say it again. I do think that when we get just stuck, and it's important, politics and so forth, when we get just mired in that and we don't have a sense of where this is going and why we do these things, Robin Williams' speech in Dead Poets Society talks about science and medicine and law. These are important things that sustain our lives. But beauty, poetry, music, this is what we live for.
Right.
And it reminds us that all of this is going towards something.
Right. And indeed, it can help us to become better people and a better community. And, you know, in that same speech about Robert Frost, President Kennedy said that a nation that disdains the mission of art invites the fate of Robert Frost's hired man. Have nothing to look backward to with pride and nothing to look forward to with hope. So we can end this episode of America This Week on a hopeful
note.
Indeed.
We can all stand on the desk if you want to.
Thanks, Kay.
So thanks so much for listening to America This Week this week. To learn more about the issues we've talked about today, check us out at americamagazine.org. And to subscribe to America Magazine, call 1-800-627-9533. That's 1-800-627-9533 for a smart Catholic take on faith and culture. For Kerry Weber and Brother Joe Hooper, I'm Father Matt Malone. Thank you and good day.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.